Hour number two of the Lowdown, and we thank you so much for being with us. Damian Barling along with Jason Ross and the birthday boy, our esteemed producer, one Christopher Michael Verlade. You're going to have an opportunity to hang with Chris. Hey, I just remembered. You got to wear the WWE title to the arena this week.
I was hoping you would forget about that.
I completely forgot. We placed that little bet. I can't remember what SummerSlam predictions.
Yeah. You went 9-2, I think.
I was. Yeah. I was quite spectacular with my SummerSlam predictions, whereas you and...
We were good.
We're grading on a curve here for calling what you two did good. But the fact of the matter is the wager was that Chris would have to show up at the next WWE event with a championship belt around his waist. And not only you have to wear the championship belt, you have to be enthusiastic about it. I want you walking in to the Golden One Center. Yeah! And you have to I want you to wear your dad's John Cena shirt.
That's definitely not happening.
All right. That wasn't part of that.
Yeah, no.
100% not happening.
Okay. All right. But you're wearing the belt, though, for sure.
I guess.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't sound enthusiastic.
It's happening, though. It's not he lost a bet. It's like, it's not a choice. Yeah. Like, he's going to wear the belt. And you can't throw it on the shoulder either. You have to wear it around
your
waist.
The rules.
I know the rules.
I'm so happy right now. Oh, I'm so happy. WWE Live is going to be at the Golden One Center on Friday, where you can see Chris Verlade wearing his WWE Championship belt. And we're going to have tickets for you when you hear WWE theme music hit sometime between now and 3 o'clock. You want more information on the show, you can go to khdk.com. We're going to talk some basketball here at the bottom of this hour, Jay Ross. Some interesting articles, some really interesting stuff. It's all money-related, too. Up on ESPN today, the NBA and revenue sharing, and you will be surprised to see, one, how many teams were in the red this year, how many NBA teams were in the red, and you'll be shocked to see who generates the most amount of money. Mm-hmm. And if you think it has to do with being a good organization or a playoff organization, man, you are sorely, sorely mistaken. The difference in some of these numbers is just absolutely phenomenal. And the fact that the NBA can't figure out how to get all 30 some odd teams out of the red is amazing to me, given that they have an excess of, I think it was like $24 billion. So we'll look at that. And they also, ESPN also broke down what NBA players actually make at the end of the day.
It's also fascinating.
And I'll tell you why this pertains to you, to me, to everybody who's listening, at least in Northern California. It costs to live in the great state of California.
This just in.
And it costs a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll touch on that here this hour. One thing we like to do here in the 1 o'clock hour, one small thought. The days immediately following the end of the football week, we like to break down the different conferences, and we'll go through each of them. Like, for example, Jason, I'll lead us off this week, if you don't mind.
Yeah,
I'll start.
Go for it.
I'll start with the NFC North. I'm going to start with Chicago. There's a reason, Chicago. There's only one Beyonce. There's only one Michael Jackson. There's only one Diana Ross. Kelly Rowland's career didn't pan out. No one is waiting for that Jermaine Jackson album to drop. No one wants to see Mike Glennon as quarterback. Mike Glennon was Jermaine Jackson in Tampa Bay. It's no one wants Jermaine Jackson to be the front man for a band. That's what Mike Glennon is. You got a quarterback. You moved up to get him. Put him in the damn game.
It's time.
How did you not know? I have so many questions. How did you not know you like this guy before you signed Mike Glennon? Mm-hmm. How did you know?
John Fox didn't know.
It never works, Jason. It never. We're gonna redshirt him. It never freaking works. We're going to put Carson Wentz as the third-string quarterback, and we're going with Sam Bradford and Chase Daniel. Carson Wentz has started every game since he's been drafted. It never, ever works. Maybe Mike Glennon is a good teacher. Maybe he's a good clipboard guy. He was sought after when he was in Tampa Bay. This isn't working. It's not working. The longer he starts, the longer the Chicago Bears have committed to losing.
Yeah, I think the only time it works are scenarios where whoever the incumbent is, whoever's the number one, there's no doubt they're not taking him out. When Favre was there and they had Rodgers, they weren't taking Favre out at that time. Alex Smith even now, they're not taking him out for Mahomes. Mahomes might be the guy later, but not right now. In this case, no one was sold on Glennon.
Mm-hmm. No, they weren't. And he's, I mean, his pocket awareness has been bad. His accuracy has been bad. Now, I said earlier, and I'll defend him in the sense that a lot of guys, especially in that game, in fact, a lot of guys in both games, Jordan Howard's drop pass cost the Bears a win against the Falcons in week one. Drop passes in Sunday's game didn't cost them the game, but it didn't look good for his stats. But Mike Glennon's not your guy.
Yeah.
It's not working. One small thought, Jason, on Green Bay. RELAX. I know that was the motto a couple of years ago. Last year was, we're just going to run the table. This team is 10 times better than that 34-23 loss to the Falcons indicates. And I don't know how good that defense is as a whole, and I know that was a big question coming out of week one, is maybe this defense is really, really, really good, but I know Kevin King is great. He's a really good cornerback. He was thrown at four times, not a single catch, couple of pass breakups. Like, their defense is, by playoff time, I think is going to be really, really legitimate. Their best wide receiver is their running back, which is an extraordinary part of their offense. This team is in really, really good shape, and I know a lot of people had them – let me rephrase that. This team is in really, really good shape 2 weeks into the season. And if you pick them, even at 1-1 as your Super Bowl favorite, you should be pretty comfortable with that because, barring injury, everything I've seen about that team, I still really, really like. One small thought on the Detroit Lions. Mm-hmm. Played last night, beat the New York Giants. Keep at it. I think this is the definition of a young team maturing. And you mentioned earlier, Matt Stafford threw the ball 21 times, 100, you know, something yards. They ran the ball to run out the clock. Once they got that punt return touchdown, they just coasted. They did the things that they had to do to win games. They didn't put Matt Stafford in a bad position where he was throwing the ball 50 times. Which we have seen Matthew Stafford, I think, do through the bulk of his career. If they're able to win games like that without hitting the turbo button in the fourth quarter like we've seen them do so many times over the course of the last year and a week, I like Detroit too. And was Detroit in the playoffs last year?
Yeah.
They were. Who beat them? I just realized that. Dallas beat them. This quote, one small thought on Minnesota. This is the strangest quote I've ever heard from a head coach. Mike Zimmer, Sam is fine, referring to Sam Bradford. Sam is fine. He might play one game from now. He might play 6 weeks from now. Either way, he's fine. What? If he might play next week or he might play 6 weeks, nothing about that situation screams fine. The Minnesota Vikings are not fine. Bradford was great in week one against a horrible defense in the New Orleans Saints. Now he's hurt. Their backup quarterback? No. I told you I was going to piss people off.
Mm-hmm.
They need to sign Colin Kaepernick. More than any, and I'm going to tell you why. Not because Colin Kaepernick is this tremendous quarterback, not because he's so great at this or he's so great at that. This Minnesota team, in addition to that defense, we know 2 weeks in, they've got playmakers.
Mm-hmm.
We know that Dalvin Cook is a playmaker. We talked about how yesterday Dalvin Cook was a little bit down after his week one, his tremendous debut in week one. He didn't get the ball. That's why his numbers were down. He stopped getting the ball because they were behind so much. He averages 3 yards per carry after contact. That's just after contact. They've got playmakers. Our second favorite, Kay Rudolph. Kyle, he's a playmaker also. This team has playmakers. They don't have the quarterback. Sam Bradford, if his knee, mind you, we're talking about a knee. He's not done in the literal sense that his season is done. Psychologically, he has been through so much. He was, maybe we overvalued having seen the way the New Orleans Saints play defense against the New England Patriots. Maybe we overvalued the Minnesota, Sam Bradford, his week one effort a little bit too much. They need to do more than any other team out there. Minnesota could sign Cap now and win. So for all you Cap haters who had the over-under at an hour and 11 before I brought him up, you win. There he is.
Nice.
Those are my thoughts on the NFC North.
Snorth.
Snorth, yes.
Snorth.
New division.
I've got the
just
snout.
You got the snout. Very good.
So my one small thought on the Atlanta Falcons is how much will Vic Beasley's injury slow down the Falcons? Now, he tore his hammy. Looks like he's going to be out a month. Only Khalil Mack is responsible for a larger percentage of the team's sacks than Beasley. They do have a fun matchup, though, this week. 2-0 Falcons, 2-0 Lions. And people are thinking they could be the top team in the NFC conversation right now. They might be, but I'm a little shaky after week one against the Bears. Much better, though, when they open up their season and they open up their stadium, I should say, on Sunday against Green Bay. One small thought on Carolina. Is the Super Bowl defense back?
Ah.
Because that defense took them to the promised land 2 years ago. They didn't get the job done, but they made it in 15-1, made it to the Super Bowl. They're number one in fewest yards, number one in fewest points allowed. They've yet to allow a touchdown, but then the caveat to that, is this a reflection of them or the Bills and the 49ers? Also tough news of the week, Greg Olsen leaving Cam Newton without his security blanket, so he being out hurts. And speaking of Cam, one more win, and he will pass Jake Delhomme as the all-time Panthers winningest quarterback. I wouldn't have guessed that. But I guess it's a short, brief Panthers quarterback history.
Yeah. Right. Well, that's true.
It's a short list. Like, stand up, all you great Panthers quarterbacks. And yeah, but Jake Delhomme has the record.
Nothing like Cleveland, though, when they stand up.
Well, there's a lot of guys there.
Who is the winningest quarterback for the Cleveland Browns? Chris,
Brian
can you
Sipe?
Look that up? Can you look
I
up who the winning
is? Brian Sipe. I don't know.
Is that a real person?
Yeah, it's a real
you
person.
Just make that name
yeah.
up?
Yeah, if I get that right, I'm going to feel really good. It's my guess.
Jake Delhomme. All right.
Tim Couch played a lot of games for the Browns. I don't know that he's the all-time winner.
He did play.
More than
one,
we thought. Like, I always felt like he barely played, but he played. They just
was number one overall pick, Tim Couch, I believe.
Yeah. My one small thought on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 1 week done, 15 straight to go. They had the bye the first week because of the hurricane, the situation. So, but hey, they handled week one for them, which is week two, very well. Chicago's not a good team, but they demolished them in every way, shape, or form. And the good news for Tampa, too, just two more weeks of waiting for Tampa's offense to be at its full strength. That's when Doug Martin will be back in a couple more weeks. One small thought on New Orleans. Does anybody fear this team anymore?
Nope.
I mean, this was a team that didn't defend before, but had just the most dynamic, scary offense. I think the offense is still pretty good. Drew Brees is still Hall of Fame self. That running game, they were ready to brag about Adrian Peterson and Kamara and Ingram, and it's not happening. And this team is in a good division. They're 0-2, and when are they ever going to get better defensively?
Rob Ryan destroyed that defense for eternity.
Yeah.
It's dead forever, and it'll never be fixed because of Rob Ryan. Chris?
Okay, there's a tie for most wins for a Cleveland quarterback at 57.
Okay, this is the entire Cleveland Browns history then.
Yes.
This isn't since 1999. No. Bernie's got to be one of them, right?
No, he's four behind.
Oh.
Bernie Kosar's not? That's actually, now you said him, that makes a ton
of
sense.
Well, yeah, I mean, since 1999 makes it a little bit differently. Okay, it makes it a little bit different, excuse me. Okay, who is it?
Okay, it is Otto Graham and Brian Sipe.
Wow, woo-hoo! Jason Ross.
I would, but once you said
goes
Bernie,
to the radio host.
Yeah. I would have definitely thought it was him. I completely forgot about Bernie Kosar.
I was actually only thinking since 1999.
Yeah.
I wasn't thinking about the entire Cleveland Browns history.
What's the leader? Was six?
Is it that much?
I don't know.
I have no. Well, Ben Roethlisberger has.
Yeah, he has more against them, right?
Right. And I think he has 22 wins against Cleveland. Oh, and then I think he has the most wins of any quarterback in Cleveland Stadium, which makes it even worse.
They can put a statue up of Ben.
Right? Exactly. Did you wrap up the division?
I finished the snorth.
You finished the snorth.
Yeah.
This is the end of Brees and Peyton, right?
Yeah. I mean, right. I don't know. I still think they've got some wins ahead of them, but.
Remember when the Superdome used to be feared, too?
Yeah. Like everything. It's like, well, if you're going to play the Saints, you got to hope you play them on the road. You know, the Saints are playing as a road team at home, invincible. Yeah. People going, I mean, Brady lit them up. Patriots are good, obviously, but it's just something's not right anymore with them.
I can't tell. Do you have more?
Okay, so, dang it, this is just freezing up. So the winner of the most since 1999 is?
I can't even venture. I have no idea.
Tim Couch.
I was going to go Derek Anderson.
Oh, yeah.
I was gonna. How many wins is it, though?
It is. I just had it here. Hold on just one second. Da-da-da-da-da. It's not one. It is 22.
Oh.
He was 22 and 37.
Okay.
I mean, that's not good, but that's not hideous.
I mean, Derek Anderson had 11 in 1 year, 10 in 1 year, and he couldn't get to 22?
Nope.
He was 16 and 18, Derek Anderson.
Oh!
They gave up on him too quickly.
Is he the at 16 and 18?
That's got to be the best percentage.
I was going to say, is he the winningest quarterback?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. A lot of 1-7s and 1-8s on here.
Oh, man.
Do you think there are, like, basketball fans in, like, Chicago or Los Angeles who are doing what we're doing to Cleveland, like to the Kings?
Oh, I bet they have in the past.
Yeah.
Lay off us.
Yeah. There is nothing. I don't think there's anything funnier in football than the quarterback situation for the Cleveland Browns.
The struggles.
Since their return to Cleveland.
Actually, I found the quarterback with the best winning percentage for the Browns during that time.
Okay.
Jake Delhomme.
Yeah.
What was it?
2-2.
Okay. All right.
You go, Jake.
We got to set a minimum games played here for that record. Good work there, Chris. The one small thought, Jason, as we move to the NFC East, one small thought on the Giants. We talked about it earlier. Hey, let's keep it in house. You were 11-5 last year. Ben McAdoo made the remark about sloppy quarterback play. Eli Manning owned it and said, yep, it's on me. My bad. I don't know if those two had a discussion after all of the press was out of the room about, hey, let's handle this a little bit differently. We know how Odell Beckham Jr. can get when things aren't going well for him. We don't want that to happen again. We don't want him getting in fights with kicking nets, kicking tees. We don't want him getting in fights with anybody. His ankle, he said he was about at 85%. Watching him move around yesterday looked pretty good. The wide receivers, you know, I was listening to Randy Moss talk about him. I was listening to Woodson talk about him. Those guys were saying he's moving really well. He doesn't look to be hindered. Said he was at about 85%. So team's going to be just fine. This division is interesting. At 0-2, not really a big deal. That's where they're sitting right now. The Eagles, Jason, one small thought on the Eagles. I kind of said this as a throwaway remark the other day when I mentioned Andy Reid light for Doug Peterson. And so far, through the first 2 weeks of the season, that's way too accurate. The Eagles have passed the ball 86 times in the first two games, and they've run the ball 35. This last week alone against Kansas City, Carson Wentz was sacked 6 times. He was hit 10. Sad fact, he also led the team in rushing. You know how many times LeGarrette Blount touched the ball? As many as you did.
Ooh.
LeGarrette Blount didn't see the ball on Sunday. That was the knock on Andy Reid. He'd abandon, he'd have Westbrook back there, he'd have guys back there, but he would rely on the arm of Donovan McNabb far too often. Doug Peterson is headed down that same road. That's a bad look. One small thought for Washington. Jay Gruden, the anti-Doug Peterson. 27 pass attempts, sacked twice for Kirk Cousins in their win this past weekend between three running backs and Kirk Cousins. 39 carries, 229 yards for the backfield of Washington. Stick with that. There could be some W's coming out of that. And one small thought on the Dallas Cowboys. Looks like Ezekiel Elliott's troubles are extending from off the field to on them. And I'm not talking about the 9 carries and the 8 yards. I'm talking about his effort being called into question. We've heard the clips now from Jerry Jones. I think we've heard, you know, Jason Garrett said he'll address it with them. Jason, there's way too much negative light on Ezekiel Elliott right now, whether it's all of the appeals process, all of that stuff he's going through off the field, or now that the Cowboys in Dak and Zeke's very young careers, they suffer their worst loss. Now the magnifying glass is being put back on him and his lack of effort. That can't happen. That just can't happen with him right now. They have to find a way. He can't fall into that mold that Odell Beckham Jr. falls into, that he fell into last year, where things aren't going his way. Suddenly he's sad and he's pouting, and you literally catch him crying on the side. You can't fall into that mode, dude, because you can talk about Odell Beckham Jr.'s passion and his reaction and his emotion. He doesn't have any off-the-field troubles. You do. Every mistake you make on the field is magnified because of everything that's going on with you off the field. Those are my thoughts on the NFC East.
All right, one small thought for me on the NFC West, starting with the Seattle Seahawks. This does look similar to past seasons, but will it go like past seasons? The best thing for me and for Seattle is their unimpressive start is that the division isn't strong. It really is. It may be weaker than ever. Way too many drop passes last week for Seattle. Now, the ground game was interesting coming into the year. We knew they added Eddie Lacy. They have Rawls. Wilson's running the ball well, too, as a quarterback. But rookie Chris Carson, the seventh-round pick from Oklahoma State, has been awesome. He may be the one that will finally get that offense going.
Question.
Yeah.
How many snaps did Eddie Lacy play on Sunday?
Same as you and I as well.
Good.
Yeah.
Him and
Blunt were hanging out.
Me, you, Eddie Lacy, and LeGarrette Blunt. We're good company here.
Arizona Cardinals, one small thought on them. Maybe coming home will help. This could be a stretch. They played their first two games on the road.
Wait a minute. I hope not.
Yeah?
I just thought of who they're playing on Monday.
Monday night. A little showcase against the Cowboys. Even though the Cowboys traditionally have filled up Arizona.
They have, yeah.
A lot of Cowboy fans. But they did have five starters out last week on the offense. They still found a way to beat the Colts. The team will take on Dallas on Monday, which means Carson Palmer needs to get better. Now, he's on a list. This isn't a good one. Andy Dalton, DeShone Kizer, and Carson Palmer. Most interceptions thrown in the NFL this year. If the Cardinals can't find any running game, those numbers for Palmer will go up. All of the numbers, including the bad ones, which are interceptions. LA Rams, if you build it, they will come? I don't know. They're trying to build something. They do have a defense that I think I like with Wade Phillips. I think that will be strong. You see the blueprint with Jared Goff and Todd Gurley. Just need a little bit more development, but the Rams fans aren't buying in just yet. But they are a year ahead of the Chargers in getting to L.A. They do have more tradition in L.A., and I think over time the Rams will be fine. And lastly, the 49ers, will Robbie Gould lead this team in scoring? Even Shanahan's success as an offensive coordinator can't mask the lack of talent.
Man.
They have no touchdowns. Team plays hard. Defense has some talent. Here's one bright spot, though, for Niner fans. Last, 22 games, they're 0-19 in games where they didn't play the Rams. So they're 3-0 against the Rams.
Hey.
0-19 against the rest of the league, and they play the Rams on Thursday. So maybe, just
book
maybe,
it. Book
it's a
it.
W.
3-0.
Yeah.
3-0. We'll
and
come
more
back.
More points for Robbie Gould.
We'll talk more NFL at the top of the 2 o'clock hour. When we get to our winners and losers, we'll look at all the 1-1 teams and try to figure out which one are you. There are teams that had dramatically different performances in week 1 and week 2, but we'll talk NBA as we continue here with the Lowdown on Sports 1140. Welcome back into the Lowdown. We thank you so much for being with us. Some text here on the text line. Rams and Chargers are doomed. L.A. don't care for football. Well, they do, just apparently not NFL football. They seem to love the USC Trojans out there. UCLA Bruins do pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
But once you get into the professional variety, not so much.
But I think it goes with a lot of places, but that place more specifically. If one of them became very good, probably more so the Rams, because they do have a history. I mean, they from Los Angeles. And I don't think everybody's just waiting for the new stadium.
No, they're not. I don't think so.
I have a fear that when that opens, I don't know how many Charger fans are going to be
there. I just can't wait. You pinpointed this. I don't know if it was yesterday or last week. I can't wait for the first Raider Charger game in San Diego.
Or LA,
north of San Diego.
Right.
Thank you. That is going to be...
It'll be embarrassing for them.
It's going to be hysterically embarrassing for the Chargers and for the NFL.
Yep.
Because they had the chance to do something about that.
They did.
You had a chance to put a team down there that could sell 90-some-odd thousand seats.
Mm-hmm.
That's not happening now. You can't sell a combined 90,000 seats. And is there something to the argument? You win some games. If you win it, they will come?
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps. But
let's say the Raiders.
That's a dangerous game to play.
A 4-12 Raider team. So a bad one going to L.A.
They're
80,000?
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. And that's down of capacity, but that's That looks good.
Absolutely.
Now, if they become good, yeah, it's full. And it might be full anyway.
Raider fans are diehard.
Yep.
That silver and black is diehard. Chargers, not so much.
Nope.
Rams, not so much.
Yeah.
Raiders, yeah, absolutely. Thursday night ending in a 3-3 tie would be the greatest thing ever. That's here on the text line. I totally agree. There was a game last year. I think it went to a tie or it was really close to a tie. And everybody was outraged about it because it was all about field goals.
Yeah, Seattle, Arizona.
Is that what it was? But it was like missed field goal after missed field goal. I couldn't have found that game more entertaining.
And I can't remember one of the kicks. Didn't it hit the upright or the crossbar?
Yes.
One of them did. Not like the crossbar last night, which was crazy.
But that one went in.
Yeah, that one went in. But yeah, it was just, it was a weird sequence to end that game.
The new Chargers Stadium will be the Levi's Stadium of the South. Niners have a half-empty new stadium. Yeah, that's all very true. Let's shift gears. I promise we're going to get back into the NFL. One of our favorite segments that we do each week, winners and losers of the week, and we will look at the winners and losers of week number two. And I'll spoiler alert right now, my biggest winner of the week was in Oakland. And it wasn't just one guy. There was about 80,000 of them. Mm-hmm. So there's a little sneak peek of our 2 o'clock hour. We'll also take a look at the 1-1 teams in the NFL. I really think this is the last week where you can look at records and start to, like, project and try to pull apart. Because once we get to week three, it's like, okay, now we have a – now there's less guesswork in it. We kind of have a feeling of who you are. So we're going to have fun with these 1-1 records. And let's shift gears, though, Jay Ross. I mentioned the – NBA, the ESPN had put up a couple of really good articles about the NBA today, and it all surrounds money. This one from Brian Windhorst and Adrian Wojnarowski detailed the financial problems that seem to plague so many franchises in the NBA. They broke it down into teams that take losses based solely off their net income. Then they took teams that took losses after revenue sharing, and you'd be surprised to hear some of these teams. The Kings, before revenue sharing, are in the red. Once revenue sharing comes along, they're not in the red anymore.
Which is important for the league.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But when you look at the teams who are taking losses right now, you have the Bucks, the Cavs, the Hawks, the Grizzlies, the Magic, Nets, the Pistons, the Spurs, and the Wizards. There's a lot of playoff teams on that list that are losing money.
I'm looking at it. Only three non-playoff teams, right, from last year.
And that's Orlando,
yep,
Brooklyn, and Detroit.
Yeah, and the year before, Pistons were in. But, yeah, this last year they were not.
That's amazing.
And when you say the Spurs, though, when you're thinking of model franchises, wildly successful franchises, San Antonio would come up first, wouldn't it? Or one of the first.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
To give you an idea of how bad it is for some of these teams, the Lakers' net income after revenue sharing is $115.4 million. The Golden State Warriors, after revenue sharing, $91.9 million. The Brooklyn Nets are in the red, $44.3 million. And even worse, the Detroit Pistons are in the red, $45.1 million. How does that happen? Brooklyn, you can almost figure out because they've been run bad on the floor, on the court. They've been run bad in the front office. They've given out, they've just thrown out money. They have paid a massive amount of luxury tax and repeater luxury penalties for years since Prokhorov bought the team. But $44 million in debt? That's amazing.
Yeah, and when you think about the Lakers, there's a couple of things. One that definitely goes in their favor is their deal with Time Warner. I mean, they've got a massive television deal down there. But I don't remember them. What's their ownership in the building? Do they own any of that?
It's AEG.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nope.
So in one sense, you could look at that as a negative, but maybe there's a positive there where that's not their overhead, I guess? Or are they just a tenant?
They're a tenant. They basically pay rent.
Okay.
Everyone that goes there pays rent.
And then whatever they figured out as a split per night that they play, they get a certain percentage. But the Knicks and the Lakers, You know, let's just do the Lakers. The Lakers television deal, whatever it is, in comparison,
$148 million. That's their net local media rights.
The local one, and yep. Everybody in the whole league gets the, you know, ABC, Turner, all
that. $24 billion.
Yeah, but you know, and I don't remember the Kings number off the top of my head, but it was reported at one point what they signed with Comcast. It's nowhere near that, and that's fine. But that's where that huge gap is. I know the Knicks have a big one. Lakers have a big one. Yeah.
The Lakers are 148. The Knicks are 104. Perhaps most shockingly, the Golden State Warriors, which this might help us figure out because we don't remember what the Sacramento Kings were, $29.8 million for the local TV rights for the Golden State Warriors. The Memphis Grizzlies, and this is where some problems come in, and this is where the discrepancy is with some teams in the league, less than $10 million.
Yeah.
So there is a 132... No, 138. There's a $138 million difference between the Memphis Grizzlies and the Los Angeles Lakers in terms of their local media rights package.
And you can't close that gap. That's going to stay that large, if not larger, over time, right? So how do you – well, I mean, Memphis has been successful as an organization. They've run their organization well. They've drafted well. They've had good teams. But – that's where people say the Lakers and the Knicks, teams like in the big markets, have an advantage because they can get those kind of local television deals. It hasn't equated to more wins, though.
I still find some of these numbers amazing. What was the Lakers? $148 million?
Mm-hmm.
The Clippers, $51
million. Same market.
There's almost a $100 million difference between the two teams in the same market.
Well, Knicks and Nets, right? Nets are in the red.
Well,
Knicks are making boatloads of money.
And the Clippers are better.
They were. Yeah, they have been. And they, yeah.
I mean, they still are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even if they're both bad this year, the Clippers are still going to be better than the Lakers
right.
are. That's the financials regarding NBA teams to me is so fascinating because we're seeing these price tags that these teams are selling for.
Yeah.
And you're scratching your head at it. Like, you're seeing these television deals for $24 billion. And, you know, people wonder why, you know, everyone has a preconceived notion as to why ESPN is constantly laying people off, and you can say it's A, B, C, or D, but if you're looking at anything other than what they're signing these television deals for, you're looking in the wrong places. $24 billion is their deal with the NBA. That's incredible.
Well, and where the NBA is so fortunate is that they can do the national collective television deal. And the local, right? So that's why the Lakers are thriving, because they're going to get a part of the big piece and then their own local piece. I was thinking about that. What if you did that? The NFL doesn't have it that way. They only have the major networks. There's no local television partnerships in the NFL. What if they'd have the same type of thing? Would LA and New York do better than, I don't know, Jacksonville and Oakland and Houston? You know, different markets. I think it's interesting. And baseball has the same ability, too, where they've got the local television deals in national, but the national's just not nearly as big as the NBA.
If a team overperforms expectations based on market size and past data, it effectively forfeits some of its revenue-sharing bounty. There's so much that plays into how this money is shared. It's really incredible. I mean, there's a whole piece of this. Of these NBA documents that these guys got their hands on, and it's called the LeBron James effect.
Mm-hmm.
How incredible is that? And that's not all that's incredible that ESPN's website put up today regarding NBA and money. If you follow Steph Curry on Twitter, you know he actually just tweeted about this. They used a tax guy to break down what NBA players actually bring home from their contracts. And how the state you live in makes such a massive difference is incredible. We'll explain that to you as we continue with the Lowdown on Sports 1140. Hey, Matt from Stockton, congratulations, man. He was paying attention and knew when you heard that random Shane McMahon theme music that was your cue to call to grab your tickets to be at the Golden One Center this Friday, September 22nd, WWE Live. Will be here. You can go to khtk.com to find out some more info, or you can go to ticketmaster.com to grab your tickets. Plenty of good, really, really good tickets still available. They actually just cut prices a few days ago. So it's going to be a really, really fun show. As I mentioned, if you've never been to a WWE live event that is not a TV event, it's a lot of fun. It moves significantly faster. There's no dead time because of commercial breaks. It's just a lot of fun to be a part of. We'll get back into the NFL here in just a heartbeat with our winners and losers of week two of the NFL season. We'll also look at the teams that are 1-1 and try to figure out which one are you? And there's a lot of 1-1 teams out there. Darren Revelle wrote this long article. He had teamed with a couple of tax guys and broke down salaries of NBA players and kind of tried to figure out I think we discussed this one time. Like, what would a take-home salary be for a guy like Steph Curry, mm-hmm. who's making $34 million? And these guys broke it down.
Yeah.
And it's actually quite intriguing. Steph Curry was, very briefly, the highest-paid player in the league. He's scheduled to make $34 million-plus this upcoming season. Now, not that we're sneezing at this or anything, not that we're poo-pooing this as if, oh, that's nothing, but his net pay, once you factor in 401k, now granted, they took some liberties here and they maxed out 401k, but they put in federal taxes, city-state taxes, agent fees, all of that stuff, bringing home about $15 million out of that $34 million contract he signed.
Which, again, in the end, who wouldn't take the $15 million? But when we hear the number 34, mm-hmm. and that is a substantial difference.
And I asked the question when he signed this, is this life-changing money for him? Because he was already making, what was it, $12
million? Yeah.
So if you figure he's bringing home closer, the numbers are different. The volume of the numbers are different, but it's still probably roughly less than probably 45% to 48% of that. He's bringing home $6 million. I still contend this is life changing money.
Oh, it is. It should be.
Even when you're making $12 million a year,
right.
A fictitious $12 million a year to now a fictitious $35 million a year, I think that's life changing. Perhaps what stands out most for me and for Jason and for anyone who is listening to this broadcast in California is the fact that he pays will pay over $11 million in taxes. That's 33% of his income. Now, granted, the percentage goes up the more money you make.
Mm-hmm.
The percentage that you pay towards, that's federal taxes. He's paying $4 million, which is about 10% in state taxes. And the state taxes go up based as federal taxes do on the amount that you earn. When you scroll down and you look at, like, LeBron's scheduled to make $33 million. LeBron's only paying $2 million in state taxes.
Right.
And I'm starting to wonder, like, how do teams start to look at the Lakers like, yeah, no, you have to be Golden State, right? You have to be great. Sacramento falls into this category.
Right. That's where we always have said, besides the other obvious things, like how are the Kings going to lure people? You know, when your team isn't winning and when it's California, it's the teams in the state that play are the Warriors, the Lakers, the Clippers. I mean, it's the smallest city of that group, you know, especially when the Warriors go to San Francisco. But
when you look at, you know, there are times where you know, it's down to the Sacramento Kings and, you know, Team X,
mm-hmm.
whatever team it may be. And they both have the same dollar figure. The Kings are offering $20 million a year. This other team is offering $18 million a year. If that other team, Team X, is in the right state, they're going to make substantially more than they would if they came to California.
Yeah.
We only ever hear about the states that don't have the income tax. If you go to Florida, if you're going to the Heat or one of those teams, or if you're going to Texas, you're going one of those three teams down, you're going to make so much more money. We don't ever hear about you don't want to go to California.
Right.
Because you're going to pay a substantial amount of money to the city of Sacramento. And it's not going to have anything to do with your Sacramento Kings. It's going to have to do with that big building down there on L Street.
The other part of it that's funny in their layout is that they said each of these guys were contributing to their 401k. It just seems funny to me. Yeah, I'm right. I'm contribute to my 401k.
Well, what if the company has matching?
It'd be smart to do it, and you get your tax write-off.
Well, and that's what's more important, right, is you have these finance guys who are like, look.
Just do it.
Yeah. You need it for, because we need to take that $30 million down as much as possible.
Yeah, let's soften that.
Yeah. Which, I know, working with our tax guy, we have to, we try everything, and obviously we're not talking anything remotely close to these figures, but we're, you know, everybody should do this. You should do this. Mm-hmm. I should do this. Everybody listening should do it. You look, some of you probably have. How can I write this off?
Mm-hmm.
What do I, can I write this off?
You can.
Oh, you, man, for us, NFL Sunday Ticket.
Yep.
That's a write off.
Yep.
Absolutely. I mean, anything, DirecTV. Oh, I watch TV for sports. That's a write off.
Mm-hmm.
You driving around it? Gas. Yeah. That's a write-off for, you know, for some of you, not for us, but for some of you it is. You got to get creative, and that's what these account people. Yeah, it's $18,000 of a $30 million contract, but we need to cushion that.
Yeah.
Now it's only $29,900, you know, whatever. Those articles are up on ESPN.com. We'll put them up on the Lowdown's Facebook page so you can check them out as well, and we're going to get back into the NFL right now. The winners and losers of week 2 of the NFL season coming up next.